Welcome to another episode of Quantum of Solace with David Robertson and Al Smith of the Solace Centre for Public Christianity. David, a lot of the stories we're going to be talking about this week are coming across from America, and obviously America has a huge cultural influence on really the whole world. But before we cross the Atlantic, can we just talk quickly about that Sally Phillips documentary on the BBC, A World Without Down Syndrome? It was a documentary really about Downs and the ethics of pregnancy screening and the staggeringly high abortion of children who are diagnosed with Down syndrome during pregnancy.
Iceland certainly got me thinking. Why is Down syndrome the disability it's socially acceptable to terminate? And how do we come back from that?
That is an absolute belter of a question, isn't it? I mean, what a programme that was.
For me, one of the most significant things I've ever seen, and I'll tell you why it's significant, not just because it's just because about Down syndrome, but because it pushes every single button in telling us where we're going in our culture, how we make decisions, how we treat the disabled, what humanity is, what absolutes are, what morality is. You need to see this programme. You need to look at it. You need to understand the route that we are going.
It's on BBC iPlayer for another couple of weeks. If not, you might be able to find it somewhere on YouTube.
For me, it was just stunning, and stunning that she was able to make it, stunning that it was made so well, stunning that it got through the censors. And people say, no, you don't have censors, we're not like Stalin. No, we have voluntary censorship. And when you breach that, you're stuffed. And we'll see what happens with her. But I mean, I thank the Lord for that woman. I thought what she did was absolutely phenomenal. And I would say pray for her, because you could tell that there was no argument against it because of the abuse that immediately
she got,
started.
Absolutely. A couple of years ago on World Down Syndrome Day, we did a very short video about Down syndrome and really the importance of the way that language is used. Don't say it's a Down syndrome child, say it's a child with Down syndrome. But there's a very interesting story coming out of Australia that actually we need to be looking to do the same thing here. There's a lady called Rebecca Kelly who's got a four-year-old son with Down syndrome. And she lives in Tasmania, and she's made a complaint to their anti-discrimination commissioner about the use of negative language, such as risk. The anti-discrimination commissioner has agreed that the use of negative language in a Down syndrome diagnosis could breach the Anti-Discrimination Act. And it's prompted a change in the national guidelines for prenatal testing. Doctors, nurses, everybody involved in the screening process has to use much more neutral language in the way that they're delivering the results now. This is something that needs to happen in the UK as well.
Kate didn't want a child like mine. That was difficult for me to hear. The thing I seem to be coming up against is this idea of choice. I chose to screen with all three of my children. With Ollie, I was given a 1 in 10,000 chance of him having Downs. But back then, if you'd asked me whether I could cope with a child with a disability, I'm not sure whether I would have said yes. Now I'd say that having him in my life has changed me and my family for the better. And that makes me question whether choice is always the wonderful thing it's cracked up to be. It leaves me wondering, where are all these individual choices going to take us? What kind of world will Ollie be living in when he's my age?
Did you watch the second presidential debate, the town hall? How long did you last? I managed 50 minutes. Did you go higher or lower?
I did the whole thing. I watched the whole thing. I watched it with just...
It's car crash television, isn't it?
Well,
it's
just with increasing horror, actually, to be honest. From a debate point of view, I thought Trump probably shaded it, but the bar was really, really, really low. And I mean low.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
I mean, he was there for the absolute taking, and Hillary decided, I think, not to do it. And I was just sitting watching, shaking my head, going, one of these two is going to be president. And Trump is, to me, I can't understand how any Christian will endorse him. I can understand how people will reluctantly vote for him because they think he's the lesser of two evils. I can understand that. But actually endorsing somebody with the attitudes and the views that he expresses strikes me as just phenomenally hypocritical. But Hillary horrified me even more. She just stood there and smirked. It was so dumb. The whole thing was dumb.
Reality television has hijacked US politics.
Well, it's reality television. You're thinking, am I watching this and is it for real? One good thing that happened recently was that in the light of Trump's latest remarks coming out, Wayne Grudem withdrew his backing, which was good. I mean, I'm really glad that Wayne did that. I'm disappointed that there are still people, Christians, who will say that.
We're looking at this a little bit from a distance, but we're both following it fairly closely. I mean, I see a lot on social media about this, and it seems like a lot of US Christians are hearing this argument that we need to vote for Trump in order to get a conservative judge appointed to the US Supreme Court. And I think, well, goodness me, I mean, that sounds more like wishful thinking than any kind of valid reason for voting for someone. I mean, I don't think I could vote for either of them if I had to vote in this election.
Well, to me, it's like saying, I've got a choice between Hitler and Stalin. And because Stalin's marginally better, I think I'm going to endorse Stalin. In the world of real politique, you can do that, but the church shouldn't be in that world.
No.
That's my problem. Individuals can say, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Reluctantly, I'm just going to swallow and I'm going to... I mean, I know Christians who are going to vote for Hillary because they regard her as being the least worst option. They can't stand her,
but
they regard her as being the least worst option. And fair enough, if they're going to do that, they're going to do that.
But I mean, when we stand before God on the Day of Judgment, we're going to have to give an account not only of every word, but of every action. I couldn't in conscience vote for anyone and say...
Well,
has American Christianity had so much faith in politics over the last 50 years that actually the Lord is removing the ability to have that faith?
Politics and money, perhaps, as well. I mean, I do remember in an election here once, I would normally vote SNP. I couldn't vote for the SNP candidate because of their views on quite a few things. I thought about the Labour candidate, but they were pretty well the same. I couldn't, in all honesty, vote for the Tory candidate either. So I was stuck. I thought, I have no candidate. What do I do? And I like the right to vote. So I went down. I was going to spoil my paper, but I ended up voting for the Scottish Socialist purely and simply as a protest vote. I knew the guy. I'd played him at chess. You know, I mean, if I thought there's any chance of him getting elected, I wouldn't have voted for him. So, you know. Well, the sail and another Messiah, yeah, tonight. But the whole way to numb and divided to buy. Did you see the program America's Hate Preachers?
This is with Stephen Anderson and the Arizona preacher who's like a small fundamentalist, King James only Baptist.
Yeah.
God hates fags. He's kind of the Arizona equivalent of the Westboro Baptist Church.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't it interesting how people in the street and atheists will know about him? You got to ask yourself, well, who wants you to know that? Why do people know about this guy? Because he's off the scale.
I saw the program, and here's the interesting thing about the actual program. It's produced by a woman called Hannah Livingston, who's a good journalist. But she went to the States for 6 months, and I was expecting something quite insightful and deep, you know, almost Louis Theroux type. And it wasn't. It was just an absolute setup. And she did several things.
Yeah, you wrote a blog article about this, didn't you? And we'll put a link to it actually on the Solace blog. If you go to solace-cpc.org, look on the blog for Quantum 83, you'll find the link to the article. But tell us, what did she do?
First of all, she exaggerated the threat. So it seemed important. So she was going, this is a growing network. Here's a man with a church that's three times the size of the average American church. Well, the average American church is 100. So she's saying 300 people. Well, there are 250 million people in the US who claim to be Christian. There are 80 million who claim to be evangelical. Let's say that those 300, let's just be generous and say that there are 10,000 like that throughout the whole US, right? That's 0.0001% of the Christian population.
So you
in the
take
States.
The extreme, you generalize based on that extreme in order to demonize.
Well, what you can do is, I mean, I can take you to any group over 10,000 people, Rangers fans, Tory supporters, Jeremy Corbyn supporters, whatever you want to do, I can take you to any one of those groups and I can find within that group 10 people at least who are off the wall, crazy, and say, this is what it is. And this is what happened. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm bringing up the Nazis again. Going back to the Nazis in the 1920s and 1930s, Der Stürmer didn't just say, right, all Jews are terrible. What they did was they portrayed stories of particular Jews.
I mean, that's just a classic state propaganda technique, isn't it? I mean, that's demonizing the enemy.
Well, I think we've got the same thing that's going on here. So, first of all, she exaggerates it. Secondly, she equates it with Christianity. Hmm. You know, this is fundamentalist Christians. Americans hate preachers. And because in Britain we live in a culture where people are not able to discern the difference, the next time I go into school, someone's going to say, although this is on BBC Three and no one watches BBC Three, it's on iPlayer.
It's on Facebook. It's spreading around social media.
And yesterday it was the number two thing on the iPlayer list.
Yeah.
It's sheer anti-Christian propaganda. Now, we were asked a while ago if we'd be involved in a campaign to use the term Christophobic. And I was batted back and forth, but I'm for it now. And the reason I'm for it is because I think this is what this is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think I'd still be against it. I'm just not sure we want to go down the road that our Muslim friends have gone down, where they're decrying every question, every criticism as Islamophobic, just as a means to try and shut down the debate. I mean, certainly we need to be standing up for our rights, sure, and call out religious discrimination wherever it exists. But we really shouldn't be surprised that non-believers do this. You know, Jesus warned us, if they hated him, they'll hate us too, don't they? But what's our response? I mean, when we're persecuted, we bless, because we know that their minds and their thinking has really been held captive by sin and by the anti-God ideas that Satan inspires in this world.
Well, it's very, very difficult.
I think you're right. I mean, I think that there is a tremendous amount of propaganda, anti-Christian propaganda, coming through the mainstream media. And that's the challenge. That's really what Solus is seeking to do, is to respond to that, isn't it?
It is. It is. And that's where we're going
to
get.
Let's open this out to the listeners. Get in touch with us via the Facebook page on the posting for Quantum 83. Let us know your thoughts. Down in the precious head,
let me say something about Dundee University compulsory sexual consent classes. And you may say, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Oxford University, and I think Cambridge, already have this. What is being proposed is that all students at the University of Dundee, like Oxford, will be forced to go to a class which will tell them to say that no means no. Now, these are students. These are intelligent people. There's a real, real problem with this. I don't think they'll go that far, but isn't the world just come crazy when you have to tell students how they can say no?
But I thought we were progressing. I thought human beings are basically good. Why would any of that be necessary?
Well, don't worry, we are progressing. And don't worry, the police are onto the case, because Police Scotland have a LGBTI squad, or at least LGBTI specially trained officers or whatever. And again, I'm looking forward to the call from Police Scotland asking me to help train their officers in Christophobia or religious hatred or things like that.
They need to have a proper understanding of Christianity, and they also need to have a proper understanding of freedom of speech. I think they need to read that Speak Up booklet from the Evangelical Alliance that we talked about on the last programme.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time. And I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
IVF, do you know what IVF is?
In vitro fertilisation?
No, InterVarsity Fellowship. And guess what they've done?
They're no longer having any fellowship.
No.
This is the story that made Time magazine. It's an evangelical Christian ministry to students that's fairly active on a lot of American college campuses. They do things like witnessing, they do Bible studies, small groups, discipleship, that kind of thing.
What they've said is that they expect their staff to hold to biblical standards on sexual morality.
Oh dear, string them up.
Staff who don't will be fired. Now, apparently this is discrimination, this is terrible, and so on.
Not if they can no longer subscribe to the statement of faith that's required by the organisation as part of their ethos.
It is part of the organisation. But nonetheless, in the land of the free, in the United States, people are complaining that if you're an IVF staff member and you openly support same-sex marriage or teach it or whatever, then you'll be fired, and therefore this is discrimination.
I'm sorry, you'd think you couldn't make this up. It's not fair to deny a cross I bear that your
gates make you ought to know. One other thing, we're doing a lot about America, but let's do something else about America. Fast food in America. Now, there is one restaurant that's outperforming all the others. Guess what it is?
I know who it is. If you've never been and you get a chance to go to America, you have to go. You want waffle fries, you want peach milkshake. We're talking Chick-fil-A, aren't we?
We are talking Chick-fil-A. And interesting thing about Chick-fil-A is a report came out this week which said that they are performing four times better than Kentucky Fried Chicken. I think they're the second biggest now in the US or something. Mm. And the profit per store is, I think, the highest in the US.
It's a Christian-run business.
Yeah, but here's the astonishing thing. The profit per store is higher than anywhere else, and yet none of their stores open on a Sunday.
The Lord will prosper you.
Isn't that incredible? Chick-fil-A. I could eat there seven times a day, where the people laugh and children play. Oh, I'm in love with Chick-fil-A. Suddenly, I need waffle fries in front of me, with some nuggets and a large sweet tea. Oh, Chick-fil-A, you set me free. Kids, get in the van so we can go there today. But their stores are closed, oh I know, 'cause it's Sunday. Chick-fil-A. What a dirty, rotten trick to play. Now I have to settle for Subway. Oh, I'm in love with Chick-fil-A. Chick-fil-A.
Man, I wish we had Chick-fil-A over here. Or actually, do you know what? In-N-Out Burger as well. That would be good to have. One last thing. Solace director Andy Bannister was speaking on BBC Radio Ulster last weekend, and he gave a great short summary of the differences between Islam and Christianity. It's well worth a listen. You'll find it on the show notes for the on the blog, on the Solace blog. That's all we've got time for. Thanks for listening. God bless. See you next week. Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.